Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
So is that like the whitest area now, or is it still like a little bit like,
No. It hasn't really switched at all. I mean, this it's like somewhat gentrified, but for now, no, not really. It really depends though, because there are some streets where there are like historic, there's like these old houses, you know, like single family homes that have like white people who've been in there for like a long time.
Yeah.
So it was already always pretty integrated, but this is mostly like Caribbean, like a lot of Jamaicans, Guyanese people, a lot of Haitian.
A lot of Caribbean people up in Canada, specifically in Toronto. And so when I spend time in Vancouver, people are like, I'm like, man, there's like no black people here. Like, oh, you got to go to Toronto, man. It's like, it's where they all are. I'm like, first of all, it's like 3%. And second of all, I'm not counting that. Like, I'm counting it like in one way, but I'm not counting it like socially. Like, we don't bond over shit. Like, it's completely different cultures.
I've never been to Vancouver.
On like purpose? The way you said that sounded.
No, no, I would go.
I thought there was a story. Like, fucking nah. Vancouver.
I've been to Portland. I've heard it's similar.
It's not similar. I mean, it's similar in the fact that they're both the Pacific Northwest. But a bunch of white people.
The climate's the same, but the vibe is different, yeah.
Because Vancouver's, you know, I would say it's even rainier, and it's definitely colder, and it's probably even whiter than Portland.
How is it rainier?
Because it's
Portland mostly rains. Like it has rare breaks from raining instead of the other way around.
That's fair, but I think we all know that Seattle's like the city known for rain because it rains more than Portland.
True.
Vancouver is an hour north, you know, 2 hours north of that. So
right, it's just more scale.
Yeah, it's more in that zone.
All
right. But yeah, like by the way, Coleman, you've never met Chris.
What's up, bro? How you doing?
Chris is my improv teammate, and he played football at Michigan. Coleman here was my summer league teammate, the one, like, probably the best chance I had to make a roster off a summer league team when I hurt my knee on, like, the first practice, which was super
bad. Oh, wait, that was Toronto in the end, huh?
That was Toronto, yeah. Sam Mitchell used to say to me, he's like, man, you got an old school game, brother. Hey, brother, you got an old school game. I like it.
Man, I haven't thought about that in a while. I always tell people I've been to Toronto, but I didn't see any of it. I just saw the fucking hotel and like,
same,
you know, for that mini camp.
But I bring up that Toronto time because that's when we met.
Okay.
And we met because Coleman took initiative. At this time, my blog was probably at its peak. And Coleman walked up to me and he's like, yo, like, that blog, like I fuck with it, basically. Like, I don't know the exact words he said, but something along those lines. And at that time, like, no one around basketball used to talk to me about the blog, really. And if they did, they'd be like, oh, like, man, that's crazy, man. Rye, you different, man. You different cat, man. Hey, man, you should be
you, man. Yo, you, they'd be like, yo, you a different dude.
So is it true? Because Ra always puts on Bubba Gum Shrimp voice whenever he talks about anybody talking about him in the arts back in his basketball time. Is this accurate or is this just him adding on
the source? I think people just didn't understand him. You know, they were like, yo, he different. You know, I have to be like, I had a friend from Detroit, from somewhere I play with from Detroit, who the way he say different was like, yo, they different, fam. They different. Like,
I know exactly what you're talking about.
He say different like 5 or 6 different ways, man. Damn.
Different, bro.
Yo. Man, I mean, they different. Yo, they different.
This dude is like boiling spaghetti over here.
No, I just gotta fill up my water. Am I? Is this being recorded right now?
Yeah, it's alive, man. We going. Which is fine though. Like no hate. Like we don't take it too serious over here.
I gotta fill up my water filter, man. I gotta get this. You know, I got the carbon charcoal filters.
Wow. You know what I mean? You call it a Brita. You call it the carbon charcoals. That's next.
No, one. No, this ain't Brita. This is the Berkey.
That's what he's saying. Yeah, you made clear that it wasn't Brita.
it's a Berkey, man. No, somebody put me onto this actually. I think people use it when they're camping. Like you can like get lake water or whatever and put it through here.
Yeah.
And then it's drinkable. But you know, I gotta.
The Brooklyn water. It's similar to lake water, I guess.
That makes sense.
No, actually the water is fine here, but I don't wanna like drink bottled water. Like I say, you know. Anyway. So what's it been like over there? Like Y'all been at the protests, or?
I have not. Rod has been in these streets.
I've been to a couple of protests. We're actually, after we finish recording with you, going to do a live Q&A with people, because all my posts, people have been like really respond. Mostly white people have been really responding like, well, what can I do? Like, what can I do? And it's not my responsibility, but I feel like I have the power to help the situation, or at least people are listening to me more than they ever have before, and I've been saying the same shit for a long time, so might as well take advantage.
I hit somebody up with it, and I was like, you know, this is the one, outside of if actual change comes from it, the one cool thing about this is I haven't had to do a white-facing bullshit lie in like a week and a half. And it feels so good. Like when people like hit me up, be like, what is fucking do some work, motherfucker? Like, what do you want from me, bro? Like, this is all you. Like, I don't have to laugh off your stupid racist jokes anymore. I'm like, none of that shit. None of this shit sweet no more, nigga.
Yeah, I think like here, particularly, like there are a lot of people who, I mean, and it is very awkward too, because there's people who haven't really been politically very engaged at all, and then they're like, all right, well, what do I do? Like, you know, they like wind me up and put me in a direction. You know, they kind of like toy soldiers, kind of.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been cool. It's been really widespread in New York, and the vibe is pretty. I'm curious to see what's going to happen, but.
But you're from Stone Mountain, right?
I'm from Stone Mountain, yeah.
Yeah, and the reason why I always remember that is because when I found out you were from Stone Mountain, the only other time I'd heard of Stone Mountain was Childish Gambino.
Childish Gambino song, yeah.
And I was like, man, like, Coleman's super dope, and he's from Stone Mountain. Childish Gambino's from Stone Mountain. It must be a dope-ass motherfucking place.
Stone Mountain make different dudes.
Stone Mountain is wild. I mean, I don't know if you know about the mountain itself?
No.
For real?
Nah, not at all.
Give us history lessons.
Oh, no shit. Clue. So the other person who's from Stone Mountain is, if you know the artist Carl Walker, who did she paints, she draws, she's known for these silhouettes. She did the big mammy sculpture made out of sugar that was in Brooklyn.
I did see that.
A few years ago. She's from Stone Mountain is known for, the mountain itself is a Confederate Mount Rushmore.
Oh, shit.
So wow. So there was a theme park, like it was like a Confederate theme park, like all of this shit, like it still exists actually. I mean, that's one of the things. Yeah, you'd have to look it up. It's hard to overstate how extreme it is. But on the side of the mountain, there's Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee, and Jefferson Davis carved into the side of the wall, of the mountain. So like huge, like. 50 feet high.
Would this exist now?
It exists now, yeah.
I've never heard of this.
This wasn't highlighted when they had that whole tear down the statues situation?
It was highlighted because it was like, oh, are they going to... But you'd have to dynamite the side of the mountain. You know what I mean? Like you can't tear it down. It's like a carving in the side of it.
That is crazy.
So, I mean, I imagine... I was curious because I'm like, imagine that at some point Atlanta is going to do an episode like based on it. Because if you grew up, like, I also think like if you grew up in Stone Mountain, and also it's a majority black city now. But at the time when they did the carving, that was like 80 years ago, 70 years ago, all the white people, like it's a suburb of Atlanta, but basically the white people keep moving further and further away from the city, you know? So like people from, so now you have like a black middle class, working class, like in Stone Mountain, in Decatur, places that were really white like 50 years ago.
Right.
So I when mean, they, been... at the time when they...
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, at the time when they did the carving, that was a white, it was a completely white city. But now it's a, you know, it's almost, you know, I don't know, 75-80% black around it, around the mountain. And so, you know, I grew up going to the park, like using all the facilities, using all the amenities and stuff like it was normal. And didn't even really think about it because it was just like part of history, you know? I mean, that was back when the flag was still a Confederate flag in Georgia, like all of this, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, I think like if you grow up, like if you're black and you grew up in Stone Mountain, you're really confronted by like history in a way that you, if you grew up somewhere that is like allegedly, you know, like allegedly more tolerant, like California or like, I don't know, places. Like
most Midwestern places, which is hilarious.
But if you come from Atlanta or if you're from the South, like specifically, like it's very clear, you know, which is why I think like a lot of people who are not exclusively, but a lot of people who deal with those issues in kind of a different way are like, just have a different relationship to it, you know?
What do you mean?
We turn it up a little bit?
Oh, gotcha.
I wasn't trying to cut him off. So, thank you.
Yeah. I did not know that story. That's right off the gate.
It's absurd.
Now I'm hot again.
Trying to put the fires out a little bit. Nah. Now we right back here again.
God damn. Yeah.
I do know Kara Walker. She was in the, what's the museum? The more modern one. It's downtown.
Downtown LA?
Yeah.
The MoCA.
The Broad or MoCA?
Broad. Thank you.
The Broad. Yeah, she's in the collection of the Broad.
Yeah. That's right.
She's in the collection of the Broad. Yeah, she's very, she did these sort of silhouettes. She's known for these silhouettes that are sort of like scenes from slavery. It's sort of collage, like cut out
fiction. You know what? Holy shit, I am remembering this.
Yeah, this whole wall. Right?
Yeah, like Kelly and I went last summer and I remember seeing that shit and I was like, actually, like really fucked me up looking at it, to be honest.
Yeah,
it's, she does extreme. Like the depictions, like with the bodies, like kind of distorted sometimes too.
Like,
and I was like, man, I do not like thinking about this.
I like how she made it look like, it's kind of like a fairy tale-y, like playing.
Yeah,
on
exactly,
wall,
exactly.
But it's like, when you really start examining it, it's like, hold up, wait a minute. I fuck with
So, you know what's interesting? I don't know if you peep this because if you're on Facebook like that, but today's the 3-year anniversary of me coming to your grad show at UCLA.
Oh, yeah? What's today?
The 3rd, June 3rd.
Oh, yeah.
Man. The one, not the second one you did at the Broad at UCLA, but I guess like your very first one where we went to some, man, I was hella in the cuts, like somewhere out in Culver City or something.
Oh, yeah, like, where the studios are. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that was like the Midway, the open studios. Wow. It's been a long time. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's been that long, but it's.
I know, right?
It's crazy. That's
for context for people listening, Coleman, again, he was my teammate. He played professional basketball for how long? 10 years, 11 years?
10 years.
10 years. A very good basketball player, but like I said, early on in our relationship, he was one of the first people to bring up outside basketball stuff to me as a basketball player, and then proceeded to go on his own journey. Like, I think to the outside, it might seem like a very similar path that we've both taken, but I think the specifics are like wildly different. And I think about this all the time, like the difference in our like styles, especially like, you know, as I've gotten into like more fine art myself. But back when it was just writing, you know, I feel like I would be like the sugary drink and you'd be like the fine wine for like, as people, yeah. Like you have like a different depth Like you spend more time in the deep, and I like dabble in and out of it, and I know how to like wrangle people in that way is kind of my like skill. But your skill is to like really just like go all the way in and like expose people to, you know, levels of thought that I don't think that they're accustomed to.
Well, I mean, I appreciate you saying that. I wouldn't call you a sugary drink though. You know, I think.
Everybody loves Sprite, man.
The constant
player. No, I mean, I think that if I was to be, I think that I know that you are not interested in like things that you feel to be like elitist, you know, and you always want to kind of stay populist and like to, you're not really interested in like things that you think aren't going to be able, you want to reach the like a large amount of people, you know? So I can appreciate like, I wouldn't say a sugary drink, but just maybe it would, because I don't like the connotation that it's unhealthy, you know, but maybe something that like goes down a little smoother, you know, that
I would say,
but you're not forcing people to drink it.
I would say you're both wines. You know, just a more reasonable bottle. You know, like, you don't gotta spend $100 on a bottle of wine. You can spend
Moscato, 30. Maybe. Maybe like a.
Damn, I wasn't gonna play him like that. Either Moscato. You could even give Moscato him like a fancy rosé.
I like Moscato.
I like Moscato's Lil Rel's stand up about it. He's like, all these hoes in the club be like, yo, you got any Moscato?
The shit crazy what happened. What happened to Moscato is crazy, man. Because like 5 years before that, nobody was buying Moscato. Like. All of a sudden, and Moscato is like really not an expensive drink. It was crazy that it was in the club for $1,000 or however much it was, you know.
What?
Like, yeah, or how much were people paying for Moscato in the club? I don't know. $200?
I've literally never seen Moscato.
Never once seen Moscato in the club.
I didn't know you
could order wine in the club.
You never remember that song that was like, I'm a sip Moscato while you do it with no hands. Remember that song? I remember who it was. Like Kurt Cobain or something.
Girl, drop a ton of fire.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. I mean, people drink champagne. I mean, champagne. You know, champagne is a wine when it comes down to it.
It's just so sweet, bro. Like that's an entryway wine for sure.
It's a sugary drink.
That's what I'm saying. That's all I was trying to get you on the Moscato. It's like, bro, this is grapefruit juice for sure.
Wait, so Coleman, if I'm Moscato, then how do you describe yourself?
I did you with that 1930s
melody. No. If I was, you know, I don't know. I can't tell you what I am. I would like to be like a nice $10, $15 wine that's good, affordable. You know what I mean? Something that everyone can guess.
$10.
You'd
like to be that?
I like how he pivoted from, well, I mean.
Like, okay, you might be that $15 bottle of wine, but it's like not sold anywhere. And it's like from like a best, small batch, like producer.
The best red wine at Trader Joe's. That's what I want to be like the, you know, mid available, but like, you know, but good.
Reasonable price point, but your friends.
Reasonable
go,
price.
Yes.
Yeah. People be like, well, where'd you find this? And you're like, well, you got to know where it is, but you know, it's not. You got to know where it is, but you can afford it. No.
Okay.
And I want to. So now that we've established that I'm supposed to be Moscato and he's supposed to be a $15 Trader Joe's wine. I remember 10 years ago, we both wrote like articles in something similar. I don't even remember what it was. But I remember mine was like, I was like, yeah, and every time you go to Shake Shack, remember. Like, and yours was like, yeah, and every time I think about my father's creaky knees and ankles. Walking slowly across the. But I was like, God damn it. This is so much better than my shit. No one's paying $1,000 for my Moscato and $15 for your wine.
Sometimes you gotta know when you beat, right?
But what?
You can't win them all.
Actually, I don't know what happened. When did you decide to. Because I remember when we spoke, when you first stopped playing, you were like, okay, I'm thinking about doing the improv. I'm thinking about doing things that are more like physical and in person. Like, when did you decide to start painting, or is that something you had already been doing?
I hadn't really been doing it like that. I kind of you know, my mom got me an art kit maybe the summer before, like a really basic, like just maybe something you get for a student in the fifth grade or something. And I never used any of it, but I was like, oh man, I mean, I do, you know, do graphic design stuff all the time. Like, it'd be cool to like,
yeah,
kind of transition to like doing some stuff, like, just kind of basic. And then, I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with the story of how I started like actually painting, but you know,
I'm unfamiliar with it.
Okay. Well, it's very topical, so we'll drop into it. I basically, you know, I'd started really exploring. Okay. So remember back when you visited me in LA and we went to the Art in the Streets exhibit?
Oh yeah.
It's like still one of the coolest like exhibits slash like weekends. Like,
oh, and, that was at the Geffen, the Mocha Geffen.
That was at the Mocha. Yeah.
Jeffrey Deitch.
And to my knowledge, that was the first ever street art exhibit to be displayed in LA, like street art specific.
Right. Yep.
And at that time I was like barely initiated into like Banksy at all, but like all these other artists were like new to me.
Yeah.
And we saw all this stuff that weekend, and like I really internalized that as being like, I really fuck with this style of creativity.
Yeah, so kind of like poppy, like Keith Haring and
yeah. I mean, I Basquiat, you know, like, growing up in LA, there was a lot of like Obey stuff around and stuff like that, and I didn't really like understand it. But we went to that exhibit, and I watched, Exit Through the Gift Shop maybe around that same time. Mm-hmm. And I really became enamored with that style. So fast forward to 2018, after I've retired, I'm making like a couple pieces like that kind of like remind me of Banksy. Like, really, that's where I was like, my starting point was, because I just like, again, like that style.
Right.
And people were like, oh, you got to do a show. You got to do a show. And I'm like, I'm not going to do a show. I'm not like a real artist. I don't have like any reason to be doing what I'm doing. I'm just fucking around. Mm-hmm. And we went to San Francisco for a weekend, and my homie there was like, yeah, man, telling you got to do a show. And my girl was like, oh yeah, he's doing one in September. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, we're going to do it. Fuck it. And I'm like, that's not actually, they're like making all these plans around me. I'm like, why are you still talking about this?
Yeah.
Nothing's happening in September.
Forced your hand, man.
And then basically what turned the corner for me is I went to Vegas for the summer league to actually meet up with my old Korean team, because they do scouting out there.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. To try and work with them to be a scout. And so the first night I'm there, some homies from college hit me up. They're like, oh, we're going to go out. Like, I hadn't seen these guys since college. They're like, can you make it? I'm like, yeah, this is the first time I've ever like been here for summer league and not had to play or anything like that. Like, might as well. And so we go to like Hakkasan or one of these mega clubs, something like that. The one at Caesar's Palace. And I mean, we must have been there like 30 minutes. And I think I just like bumped into the wrong guy. And he like gave me a look, and I like gave him a look back. And all of a sudden I'm being dragged, like picked up and dragged to like some secret room by like 5-6 guys. Like, completely surprised me. Like literally lifted me off the ground by my neck, the whole deal.
Mm.
Throw me on the ground and handcuff me. And I'm like pleading, like, what the hell's going on? Like, why am I here? They're like, oh, we can't let you go until this man decides to press charges or not. And the guy I bumped into is like just taking a seat right in front of me as I'm on the ground. And I'm like, yo, like, this has got to be illegal. Like, can I talk to like the real police? And they're like, we are the real police. So I found out that these casinos, they're not security inside. These are all real police officers. That's how they really fuck you.
Right, because Vegas is, Vegas is like another world. Yeah.
So I have like literally no recourse. And they keep me there on the ground, face down in handcuffs for an hour. And it's all dependent on if this white dude says I can leave or not, whether he wants to press charges. Of course, there's no charges to press. I'm saying this, doesn't matter. Mm. The guy's just smiling at me the whole time.
Okay? Who was the dude, though?
I'll never know. But I don't remember his face. I remember his look, but I don't remember his face. And finally, they just let me go, but they made me leave through like the side exit. Like, I couldn't go back into the club. So like the homies I was with didn't even know what happened to me. They're like, I was just standing with all of them, then I was just gone. Like fucking V for Vendetta or some shit.
Gotta disappear.
Yeah.
How does something disappear like that?
And then when I got back, man, I just broke down. And it, like, I think the part about, like, having to look in this dude's eyes for that long and like beg him to let me go, basically, it really just fucked me up. And the next day I didn't leave the hotel at all. I ordered like a bottle of vodka to room service and drank the whole thing and just sat in there and cried.
This was 2018?
This is 2018. This is July.
Wow.
And then when the next day after that, I went back to LA. Like, again, I cut my trip short. I just went back to LA. And when I got there, when I got back to LA, there were three like 5 foot by 6 foot canvases like outside my apartment door. I guess I had blacked out and ordered them. And I just started like, and I just painted a Colin Kaepernick. And then I was like, you know what? Like, and I did it like all neon-y colors, you know, and stuff. And then I was like, you know what? I am going to do a show. Like, fuck that. Like, and I'm going to call it Neon Black because I don't, I want to show that black has many different shades and that to be dark doesn't mean you have to be dangerous. And that's just basically how it started. There was no, it wasn't planned like that. It's just how
it went. I remember when you're posting about first having that show. Was it in Culver?
This was in Hollywood.
In Hollywood? Yeah, I remember, but I had no idea like the origin story about like what had gone on. And but I like, cause I remember thinking at the time that the color palette was really, it seemed like a sort of evolution out of like the Boombo stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And it made sense that it was like, it was sort of, I mean, it was something new, but it was like a, you already had a, like a specific sort of sensibility about like how to mix colors and like how, what to put next to each other, like what kind of combinations to have. And then it was just the subject matter that took a turn for it, you know, like, and like the medium, but it seemed like it wasn't like, oh, like this doesn't make any sense. It was like, okay, this seems like a really like an interesting progression, you know?
Yeah. That's what, when people, they'd be like, man, you just like started painting. I'm like, well, I mean, yes, but also not really. I've been doing like kind of this for a long time.
Yeah, you were seeing things visually. You were seeing things visually, like in that, like you had like a visual sort of framework, you know, right, for like how you wanted to put things together, which I think is really, really interesting. You know, I saw the video you posted the other day about what's her name, Doja Cat.
Yeah,
and it was Doja Cat, and it was another portrait. Yeah, Lana Del Rey. Which is why, because I didn't, at the time when you posted about it, I had no idea hadn't heard about what happened with Doja Cat or like that whole controversy.
That's crazy.
So yeah. That's a tough one. House.
It was just wild that it all happened. Like the 2 days I decided to like work on this painting is like both of the days that those like controversies happened. But
Yeah. But I guess that's the thing about if you're working with stuff that's like, in the news or like people who are like well known or like in the news, then like the way they can kind of feed each other back and forth, like what's happened in reality and like if something right. Like now the whole like Kaepernick thing has taken on this symbolic weight, you know, now it's that it's
full circle.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like you have like police officers kneeling, you have like over here I sent you the video in Williamsburg here in Brooklyn, like the whole park, I don't want to overstate it, but at least like 4,000 or 5,000 people filled every bit of the grass in this park, kneeling for the entire, you know, the 8 minutes and 50 seconds or however long it was that George Floyd was suffocated. So it's cause I think like the meaning of the work, like the Kaepernick, the like painting that 2 years ago, And like painting that in this moment now, just because of like the way that our reality has changed, it has a different resonance, I think, you know, which is really interesting.
I also like, I don't know if this was a conscious or a subconscious thing. I guess it's kind of conscious. Both forms of pain that cause both of the things, right? It's the same, but it changed. At the beginning, you wanted to do that black comes in all these shades. But this one feels more of like, fuck that. I'm black.
I'm gonna break, like, look at it, like, you know what I mean? Like, just because you went all black and the white, it's like,
have you seen the new Kaepernick that I did?
I haven't seen it yet. I don't know when you posted it.
It's all just black and white and grayscale. So I mean, this is probably 2 or 3 days ago I posted it. But
I see here now. Yeah, and with the with the names in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Chris is right. It's like with this newer one, it's more for me. Like, yeah, I don't have to prove anything. I don't have to be colorful for you. You know, it's like, it's interesting because, like, again, when I first retired from basketball, I like how you described it. It was kind of like forging, like, boom, though, energy into, like, another direction.
Yeah.
And at this point, I mean, I still do colorful stuff, but it's more like color patterns. And then I do a lot more black and white stuff, too, because I've, like, settled into...
It's kind of grayscale.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't want to do a neon Colin Kaepernick for you right now. Like, that's not how I feel at all. I don't owe anybody shit right now.
How long does it take you to make the words?
Usually a few days. I mean, spray paint dries rather quickly.
Yeah.
But it's another lesson I had to learn. Because, you know, I never, like, really went to school like you did. So, you know, like, I fucked up many a... paintings, like, just rushing because I'm like I'm too ready to go. I've had to learn to, like, you know, let it breathe for a minute, dog. Like,
yeah, for sure.
But you never said how you I don't think I ever learned how you got into art, because you were playing basketball, then all of a sudden it seemed like you were just like decided to, like, live in, like, Slovenia for a while or something, or France. Like, no, but I'm serious.
Nah.
Like, somewhere. And then all of a sudden you were just like, we're at UCLA art school, and I was like, man, I don't know what happened.
I think I had some friends who kind of put me on, like, kind of like you, I started going to museums, like, maybe 5 or 6 years before I stopped playing. And then I saw some work that I found, like, really interesting. And it, you know, I didn't grow up going to museums. So, like, I didn't go to an art museum until I was an adult, you know? So I started just, when I was overseas, I was just reading a lot of books. I was ordering a lot of shit, like, reading everything I could get my hands on, going to a lot of museums. And then at a certain point, I was like, all right, I'm just going to like try to, like, really try to apply. Because I felt like, oh, you know, I didn't have, like, a creative practice, and, you know, I was making videos and stuff, but it didn't feel like organized enough or something. So, and I thought it would be easier for me to have, like, a transition period into something. Like, I didn't think I was disciplined enough to, like you were able to just, like, stop, and then all of a sudden you had, like, a fully formed practice where you're, like, working every day and, like, really committed to it. But I was like, I don't think I'm going to be able to just stop and start something new. Like, I needed a lot of instruction and support and stuff. So I just did a lot of research, and I, luckily I had some people who, like, gave me good advice about, like, what kind of program I should be looking for. But I mean, the thing is, the really funny thing is, like, I went to the school, and a lot of the people that were teaching were really famous, but I didn't know that because I didn't know, like, I was just so ignorant that, like,
that's why I feel about improv class. I'm like,
you know,
I'm like, oh, my teacher, like, so cool, and then I'm like, oh, wait, what, you've done all this? Like, what the
fuck? Yeah.
I think that's better.
It's better too, because I think if you're not intimidated, like, you kind of come into it differently, you know?
Yeah. You'll challenge their opinion, and that's the only way you're going to find your voice, is to be like, well, why is that the thing?
Like,
and
if you're, like, spooky, if I had,
be like, your word's gospel.
Like, if I had known more, like, it wasn't like that I was challenging them. It's just that I was, like, talking to them, like, on a pretty equal level. Yeah, I felt like I could have a conversation with them. But if I had known that they were, like, legendary, then I would have been like, shit, like, I don't know what to do. So, I mean, I just read a lot of books. I mean, I still can, that's basically how I, like, work, you know, still is just doing a lot of research and figuring out what form something can take. And it ends up being a lot of different ways, a lot of different mediums.
Yeah, I was trying to think of how I would describe your, like, art, and I'm like, I've seen like video, I've seen you do, like, a comic book thing, I've seen you do so many different things that I'm like, how would you even describe what you do?
I would, the jargon term, you know, officially you would be like, oh, this is like a multidisciplinary conceptual, mostly conceptual. So it's not, you know, aesthetically, sometimes it can be, you know, I want it to look good, but it isn't like, I'm not really so interested in, or not really so engaged in like dealing with color and stuff like that. And like the color something is won't, like, for example, you can make the distinction by saying, okay, you made something that was neon and then all of a sudden it was gray. And then the change in color has a pretty direct relationship to the change in meaning, right? Like the way that you're wanting to express things is often done like through color or like combinations of color or the lack of color or something. And I might say that like how I'm working, the meaning is probably like this, the change in the aesthetics, while it has a meaning, it's not necessarily like the core of what it is, like how it looks or like how it's made isn't so much. It's more like there's an idea and I'm trying to figure out a way to express it in some way. Okay. Like I had a show.
That's $15 wine. Get right? the fuck out of here.
But I mean, it's not like I don't want it to be like people can't. I don't want it to be like people can't follow it. You know what I mean? I did something in LA. It's still up. Actually, it opened like the week before the virus hit. There's like, and that work is like a series of light boxes. So it's very, you know, it's very bright. It's a dark room with these bright light boxes. It's really graphic. It was done mostly like designed in sort of like a graphic design way, like InDesign. And I had never worked in that medium before, but I thought, oh, okay, this is a good way to like try to work with it. Cause it was, I wanted something that sort of suggested advertising, you know? And so I wanted something that would be seductive in the same way. So I guess I'm saying like I'm working with the idea or like research or whatever the history or the concept is, and then trying to find a medium that would be appropriate for it that could add extra meaning alongside like what the text is, but also like the way it's displayed, you know?
So an idea is what forms the pieces, not like a search to try different art forms. You're not trying to do like an avatar thing and be like, well, let me see how I express myself in this given thing. It's more right. So I have this point right. And this thing can right. make me make this
exactly
point.
Like what's the best way to try to express the point? Like there was a work that, you know, Rod, you came to that one that was a video piece and it was two videos side by side. And initially, the easiest way to say it was work that was taken throughout the sort of like Black diaspora, and some of it was from like in Europe and in Africa, and some of it was from the US, right? But it was a video piece, and initially I was shooting it as a film, you know, and it was like one screen and all of the images appeared like one after another on a screen on one channel. And then at a certain point I was like, oh, the most important thing about the work is that these groups are split by an ocean, and that there was like an eastern side and a western side, and that to sort of show the split, I could split everything that happened on the eastern side of the Atlantic on like the right channel, and everything on the western side on the left channel, and then it became a two channel video.
Yeah.
But the point of making it a two channel video was because I thought, okay, here's a way to sort of increase the separation that I see is like in the work, you know. And it's not just because it looks cool, although I do think it looks cool. It was like, okay, I feel like I need to do this thing, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Like so, it'll be like that, you know. I'm like working on something, and I'm like, oh, this shouldn't be a video. This should just be like.
But on the subject of that video that you're referencing, you know, one thing about, again, why I remember you writing about, you know, your father's like creaky knees and ankles, or, you know, when it comes to this video, like I remember it vividly, like, because you are really good at like taking like something like a simple image and making it seem like really powerful. And in that video, you know, I remember at one point is it you? Like, is it you spinning a sign, or are you watching someone spinning a sign, like in front of a
strip mall? Yeah.
And then on the other side is like the, which I didn't know like some of the specifics, but just this one image of like a monument to maybe a like Nigerian king who like sold slaves.
Right. Yeah. That's like one and of the later like, images. Yeah.
It's like, and I guess like at the time I wasn't an artist, so I don't, I think I like maybe didn't fully comprehend that how I internalize it is what's important. But looking back, I internalize that as like the, you know, one led to the other. It's like you started here, you were sold, and now you're selling something else over here. And I just, I'll never forget how I felt looking at that. Like in this room with these videos weren't small. They were like big as these fucking windows, like bigger, like huge on this wall. And yeah, both the images, like you really do a good job of burning these images into people's minds, I feel.
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate that. And I also, like, the cool thing is, like, you don't really know what people are going to come, like, how people are going to respond. And I think one of, and maybe this could be something else we could talk about, because I'm curious how you feel about this, is, like, one of the interesting things about art that is also very frustrating is that you don't get a lot of clarity, you know? Like, you don't really know whether you won or not. You don't really know if, like, people are getting it. You don't know if, like, it makes sense. You don't know if it's a stupid idea, you know? And one of the things I miss about playing sports is that, you know, at the end of the day, you had a real clear sense of, like, whether you sucked or not. Yeah. And, like, you either you had, like, a real clear sense that you won, in which case you could be really satisfied and or whatever. Or you had a really clear sense that you lost, which is like unpleasant, but you know, like, okay, I missed 10 shots. I missed blah, blah, blah. I need to do this, this, and that better. Yeah. But with this, sometimes you can be like, man, like, I don't really know what happened. You know, just like, it's just, there's no parameters for feedback. There's no way you can know whether you're being successful or not, or what, you know, or it's hard to figure out what you know, you got to find your own motivation and your own satisfaction.
I was just talking to my mom about this, and I guess in yours it would be more broad, because I was also thinking this when you said you could do all those different mediums to express your point, and there's a certain freedom in you guys' type of art where it's the idea of, as the artist, you're only pointing out the iceberg, and then your interpretation, like you said, is everything else in the iceberg. So, like, what you make is, like, as the person consuming the art is the meaning of the piece. So if you get somebody to feel anything and understand it on one level, you did do it. But I agree, as someone playing sports, it's, especially, I guess, it's more tailored because I am in writing. It's, you got to look at it two ways. There's the way of, did I win that I'm eating off of this shit? Like, if I can cover my stuff. And then there's also, just for me, did one person at least understand what message I was trying to do? Whatever you want to pull from it, you pull from it. But did one person at least go, I got it? Does that make sense?
Yeah, on the same token, I also think that, like, did you ever see when they said Stephen Colbert, you know, when he was making fun of Republicans, he thought that the satire was very clear, and I would say that it's like really successful left wing satire, but when they started studying it, they saw like there were like plenty of Republicans and people who like disagreed with his politics, who watched it and loved it and like didn't. So even sometimes there are things that we think are really clear, like artistically, whether, and that can be anything from like fine art to like to improv to late night or something. You really have no control over like how it's going to be received. You know, like
that's the underneath the iceberg part.
that yeah. I'm saying. Like, you only are putting it out. Like, when I say point out the iceberg, that's all I mean from somebody. That's what I wanted from it. Like, you don't have to agree with it. You can find, dig up all you want to do. People overanalyze shit all the time. Like, because the girl tied her shoes in Shazam don't mean that it was a foreshadowing for the end of it. But I just need, for my mind, for my sense of athlete, I'm like, yo, I'm trying to portray a message. Did you get the message? That I
would. What if they'd be like, what if be like, that ain't no iceberg, that's cream cheese.
I'm like, well, nigga, you stupid. I don't know what to tell you.
They're going to be protesting like icebergs don't exist. You know, then you have people who deny ice exists. You know what I mean?
I'm not your God.
Like, yeah.
It's funny, though. Like, what you just said, the example of Stephen Colbert. You know, I think Dave Chappelle fell into that same thing where it's like, what is success and what it meant to him? I think for me, it's like, even going back to the story of how I became an artist, like, one thing I said early in this conversation, but very often back then, is like, am I even valid in this space? Like, for me, like, that's more difficult. I do like art that's very easy to understand, to be honest. I feel like that's part of the point. Like, I have to like actually go to lengths to kind of hide overt messaging because it's so overt. But in doing so, and maybe this is why, like, I said I'm a sugary drink and you're the, you know, the fine wine, is that when something's so overt, it's almost like people would like to think that there's, like, way more underneath the iceberg than what there is sometimes. Mm-hmm. And when it's lacking so much extra, I think people think it doesn't qualify. Or at least that's how I've processed it, which may be wrong and it may be right, but it took me a while to even feel comfortable, like, letting someone see me paint or create at all.
Right.
Because I always feel like when you, like, if you could see how it's done, I feel like my work sometimes is like a magic trick, right? Like, once you know what the trick is, you're like way less impressed by it. And that to me has always kind of like been where I feel like the wins and losses come from, is if I do something and people are like, and another artist is more important. Like, another artist that I respect is like, man, I like what you did there. Then I'm like, right, I'm valid. Like, I'm actually, like, I count. In sports, for me, though, that's like, that was the same. And it wasn't because of my ability. It's because of how people would perceive me. Like you said before, it's like, oh, he's like a different dude. He does all this stuff off the court. I had to be good enough at basketball that at a certain point, people just had to shut their mouth, you know, because they were never really going to like me because I was different. Yeah, like, and I mean, I don't mean like me as a person, but maybe you can talk to this, but as an athlete, as a competitor, the less it seemed like I was focused on the game, the more people didn't respect my game. They're like, oh, like, he just gets lucky. He just has this and that. And I had to like overshoot that to be. They still don't. I still like played with a lot of guys who I got more accolades than, more championships than, for years and years. And none of them will ever say, like, Rob might have been better than me one time. Like, never, never. Part of that's competitiveness, but I could turn the other way and be like, man, like, Rudy Gay dunked the shit out of me.
That's,
time,
that's,
you know
but
I mean?
That's, like, what, that's what people do, though, man. I mean, like, fucking Horace Grant is like, Michael Jordan wasn't better. Like, people say all types of shit. Like, you know, like, I saw the Pistons documentary, actually. Did you see that one, the Bad Boys documentary?
Yes.
And Adrian Dantley was still talking. Who did he get? He was talking about Mark Aguirre, and he was like, yo, nah, I was way better than Mark Aguirre. Like, Mark Aguirre was trash. Like, even though when they traded him for it and they won the championship, he was like, I think that's like just a sports thing. Like people hate to. But do you think
something
like, even people
with the personality thing, though?
No, but I just think, like, even if people were talking shit, that you still have the satisfaction of being like, well, I won this, this, and this. I had this, this, and this, like, per game.
Wait, let me say that. But then also, I would say that I played against, man, I can't remember this dude's name. There was a dude in the D-League who was not that great unless you talked a lot of shit to him. And then he just became, like, an instant bucket.
Nah, a big man?
I know it was like a wing. I don't know if you were in the league at that time, but the way people talked about him was that like was like he was the greatest player they'd ever seen. Man, you don't want to mess with him, man. And then the way people talked about me was like, oh, he's soft, he's trash. Like, even if I won more, the narrative was always like the more like, and part of this is I think black culture as well, but like, be more gutter and have big moments than like do what's necessary and win.
But that's a lot. That's not black culture, though.
Sports. That's just
like people remember like the people remember the dude who scored 40 once than the guy who's like averaging 10 and 7 consistently. Like, I mean, if you look at like when you play overseas and it's like, oh, your efficiency rating really matters. Like everything, the whole game matters. It's not like the dude who averages 20 on like 18 shots, you know. But it's like,
is this American sports culture then?
I don't know if it's American sports culture so much as it is like
just like highlights. People like
like quotes. Yeah, people like sound bites. It's like a sound bite, you know. Like, think about like the all the mixtapes where someone crossing my up and then missed a layup. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It was about
an example of what you're saying is like culture. Like Avery Bradley. No one really like thinks about, but he's been a very good player for a long time on winning teams.
He's really
like
good.
Brandon
yeah.
Jennings is like a legend because he scored 55 as a rookie.
He scored 50, but where is he still? Yeah. Is he still in the league?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. We all remember that he scored 55 as a rookie.
Yeah, yeah. But it's but that's the thing. It's like, yeah, I don't know. But I mean, now you have the satisfaction of having like another career, and you know, like. I also think that what you're saying, I think you're kind of talking about like feeling like you couldn't be in the space or like feeling like a bit of a imposter or like not being able to like claim, you know, not being able to take up like what you're wondering about like legitimacy and stuff. And I think also like I always try to remind myself of this. And this is one of the things I do like about art versus sports is that you have such a, like a career is such a long time, you know, like you can really develop a practice. Like I think of it now as sort of like, okay, like committing towards, this is like a life that can, this can develop over 20 or 30 years. It's not like in 7 years, my knees are shot and like, I can't, you can't paint anymore. You know what I mean? Like you just in the same way that like you're noticing how things are developing, like how your style is developing, like, okay, maybe you're experimenting with color in a different way or experimenting with gray or black and white, you know, you might find that because this is like such a long process. You might stop finding like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you're going to feel compelled to like do like outdoor installations or like move into sculpture and like think about how you can turn that into like 3D and bring it off the canvas or something. Like it's such a rewarding and an interesting way of working. And also like I have to remember, like I started playing ball when I was 5, man. Like early, like 5, yeah. 6, 7 years old. And so I was really good, but so many things I learned just about how I move around or how I relate to a basketball court, I learned that when I was a little kid, you know. So I'm super young and super inexperienced, even though like I feel that I have made some things that worked out. Like it's still super early, you know? So you always have the ability to develop. And the thing about art is that it can happen on such a long time scale. You know, people make work up until, some people make their best work in their 60s, you know, some people make their best work in their 70s. So it's all part of a process of like moving towards something that's uncertain, but could be really, you know, but like moving there is like the rewarding part. You know? So like, I think it makes sense to be a little bit uncertain. You know, you've been doing like 2 years, you know, 3 years ago or 4 years ago, you were in, you know, some hotel in rural Korea, you know, like it's crazy also, it's crazy to be doing what you're doing now.
Also, we all have imposter syndrome, bro. And the thing that is just exacerbated by the fact that we want to be artists is that the whole point of art is self-expression. It's how do I view existence. And so you feel uncomfortable because you are opening up people. You're opening up for people to say how you view things is fucking dumb if they say that your art is dumb. But at the end of the day,
criticism, that's the part of being an athlete that we have to break. People's criticism does not create the validity for the art that we make. Like, they can have their opinion, that's cool, but like, you told how you feel, you expressed yourself. That's what the goal is, right?
Yeah, I like thinking of it in that way. Like, I like what you're saying about like habits that you have to break. Because I think one of the things, you know, it's like, I not only is it like, okay, there's a difficulty in like this defining success, but also realizing so much of my identity or like my self-conception was based on what I thought was winning, you know? So you want to like, as soon as you come on the court, you want to like know who's the best or like who's dominating or like who has the ring, blah, blah, blah. And then you got to go for that person or you got to go for that team. And like every year when you start, you know, like, okay, this is the best team. And every day when we come into practice, we think about how we're going to beat them, you know? And it's very clear, but it's also very external, you know? And it's kind of a trap when you're like working in something that has to be necessarily internally motivated and something that it's a commitment that you're making to yourself about how, like what kind of work you're going to put in, not necessarily because, you know, you're going to make a ton of money or because, you know, rich people are going to be interested in it or people are going to give you awards or something, but it's like, no, the really beautiful thing about it is that it can be an internal journey. And like I said, that can take a long time and that can develop, you know, whether it's writing, whether it's like figurative work, whether, you know, yeah, your skills and the way you look at things are going to change in a way that, and there's no boundaries, there's no rules, there's no right. You know,
because you change. You're changing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like if you could be like, it's like if you could, you know, if you could all of a sudden like, be like, I'm going to start shooting from out of bounds or like, I'm going to start, you know, I'm going to do a hop step and take 6 steps.
Yeah.
And they like, you can't do that. It's against the rules. You're like, no, nah, fuck that. Like
James Harden does that all the time. What do you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
Jump back.
Yeah, that new move, that like the new step back off one leg joint.
Bro, he got into that real quick. He tried the first couple games.
Yo, but I was like, oh, he's trying to innovate, but it was wild. Like, I was like, this is crazy. This is like, there's a reason that people like want to square up.
Like, I mean, I will say, and maybe this is, there's like parallels here to art creativity, but you know, you've played overseas. Everywhere I've ever played where someone has like a funky thing in their game that's like, that can't really be taught.
Yeah.
They're like fucking pretty good. Like it's yeah. like, cause everyone else is like, we forget that we learn things on the basis of this is the most effective way to teach mass amounts of people. But then you go to like Puerto Rico and there's some guy that shoots like this and you're just so unprepared for it that it always works.
I had a Serbian guy that I played with in France who had a, he did a pump fake, but he did a moving pump fake that like, if he was, you know how you get 2 steps like after the gather? He would dribble, and then the first gather step, that's when he did the pump fake.
Oh,
and so people would always jump because it looked, he made it completely realistic that it looked like he was going to shoot. So he'd do the pump fake on the first jump. You would jump because it looks like he's going to shoot. And then he takes one more step and then everyone's like, oh shit, trap. But no, it wasn't a trap ball. It was like, it was foolproof. The only problem was that like he got called for a lot of walks because the referees would be so confused, but he'd have to tell them like after they called the walk, he'd have like, listen, look at what I'm doing right now. Look at my feet. Okay. You see that I'm doing that precisely on the first step, but no one could stop it. He was like 37 years old. He was so slow.
I'm about to ask how old he was. Cause I'm like, yeah, like he's probably going to play forever doing that shit.
It was incredible. I mean, I've never seen anyone do it in the league actually. Cause it's just, no one, he's the only person in my life I've seen pump fake like that. It was beautiful. It was like truly beautiful because he couldn't get past anybody. So it would only be like swing, swing, rotate, you know, then no one's on him. Then he goes dribble, dribble, pump fake. And then everyone jumps.
Every time.
Then he stepped one real slow step around and like flips it in.
Right. Every country has at least one or two guys like that, and they're always on the national team. And they always like, yeah, they have something funky about their game. Like, and I think that's just an important lesson again, is that like, remember that we're taught things based on how to reach the most people, not how to be the most effective for yourself.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah. Yeah.
That's so, we gotta look at wrapping this up, but, I just want to know what's coming up for you, Coleman.
I'm just working. I have a project that I'm working on, but it's not confirmed, so I don't want to talk about it. But it'll be really cool if it works out. It would be like showing something to Europe for the first time. So I'm like hoping to get confirmation on that in the next couple.
You hear that, everybody? Super couple secret. Weeks. Wow. Super cool.
European. It's not even look, secret. Fine, I just fine. Feel
it. Look, you can be $15, but you're not Trader Joe's, fam. Okay, you got to be at least like a boutique wine shop or something.
No, it's not even secret. It's just it's the only thing I got. I mean, actually, I mean, if I'm gonna keep it really 100 with you, it's still like it's not for certain, and I hope it works out. But like, it only came up like a week ago, and 2 weeks ago I was in my house freaking out about the virus. And I'm thinking like, man, I don't know if I chose the right path. Like, I'm never gonna make any money from this shit. Like, I don't have any opportunity. Like, I was like really going through it, man. Like, so I really didn't have anything going on, to be quite honest. And potentially I will have something, but right now it's not sure. But if it works out, it'd be great. But I'm still like maintaining. I'm trying to like stay busy and continue working on things. And I mean, and honestly, this the quarantine has been a good time, both for reflection and like just extreme anxiety, because I don't, you know, I got nowhere to hide. And I mean, I don't really have a lot of distractions either. So
yeah.
But yeah,
in the
but
bottle I'm like everyone else.
I had to stop, man. I've been like, you know, I had some nice light edibles that I got from a homie. Had some nice like calm ones, you know. But I can't really drink like that, you know, because.
Where can people find you on social?
I have Instagram. Yeah, I have Instagram. Yes, okay, good. At yes, okay, good.
At yes, okay, good.
But I don't even have a website anymore. I gotta make a website. I gotta figure out. I've had a lot of like debate about how online to be and like how I wanna like what kind of online presence I wanna have. So I'm figuring that out. But I'm around, you know, in real life. I'm here in real life too. So y'all in Brooklyn, hit me up.
Yeah. If this were a more expensive podcast, it would have been a great Squarespace for all your website needs.
I know. What's the MailChimp?
Trying to get some pillows, some mattresses.
Hey, Chris, where can they find you on social?
Ooh, at Dreddens. I've been being real problematic lately. But go ahead and follow.
And you can find me on Instagram at Zerion, Zsorryon, my middle name. And on Twitter at Boomno. Thanks for joining us, man. Like, we gotta get you back. There's so many things we could fucking cover with you.
Yeah, we gotta go back over what happened at Art in the Streets.
Yeah,
what happened at Art in the
Video? We'll unearth the video. Oh, I still have it on my computer.
Oh shit, here we go.
It was fun, man. It was fun.
It was a wild time, man.
I'll just leave everyone with this. At some point during the day, Coleman was quite high, and he just screams into the air like, "I didn't want this."
That was the first time I had tried. What year was that? It was like 2011. Yo, that was the first time I had ever tried California weed.
Just came in and, too strong,
bro. I hit one hit off the gravity bar. And I remember we were at the museum. I disappeared, and they came and found me. And I was eating at a Chinese restaurant. And Rob was like, yo, this got a C health rating. He was like, what's wrong with you?
He's like, what's said, wrong fam, with you? You can't eat that.
You can't eat that. I was like, man, I didn't even look at the rating, man. I was just so hungry.
He said, I just thought it was part of the sign.
It was
bro,
like some super, it was like some super dingy shit, like in the middle of like I was the only person eating in the restaurant.
even the people behind the register were like, yeah, you sure, like, bro?
They were like, yo, you really? Welcome. They were like, thank you. Here.
This is a front, man. We ain't have no customers.
You notice the C, though, because the A is green and the B is blue and the C is like magenta or something.
Oh, it's like the C is rare. Like, it's rare to see a C.
I have not seen a C in a group.
They give you multiple chances. Like, they don't give you a C. Yeah, the C is like a, it's like graded on a curve. Like, a C is like failing.
A C is you shouldn't be open, but you know somebody.
Yeah. Exactly. But I remember we gotta get you out of here, man.
Made your immune system stronger, bro.
Yeah,
we'll follow up on this and get the full details next time. If we didn't have to host this thing in like literally 5 minutes, I'd stay on with you. But we gotta get out of here, Coleman.
All right, man. It was good talking to you.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.